Go ahead with the recording.
Thank you very much, Ricardo. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the IRTPC call on the 18th of September 2012. On the call today, we have Hugo de Faller, Barbara Knight, Humanita Batayga, Rob Mountain, Mikey O'Connor, James Bodell, Kevin Erdman, Volker Greiman, and Paul Diaz. We have apologies from Phil Corwin, Chris Chaplow, Michaela Nalen, and Zaid Zemil. From staff, we have Enrique Koenigs, Barry Cobb, and myself, Natalie Pergan. I'd like to remind all participants to please state their names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, James.
Thank you, and good morning, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the IRTPC PDP Working Group call for September 18th, 2012, as we push on towards our self-imposed deadline of the Toronto meeting for our final report, and I think that we are getting closer and making progress on some of our open issues. Per our standard rules of procedure here, the first step is hopefully everyone had a chance to review the draft agenda that was sent around by Marika, and it appears in the right-hand column of the Adobe chat room. If there are any objections or additions to that agenda, please indicate so now. And if there are any updates or changes to a statement of interest, if someone who has any of those, please indicate so by raising their hand or interrupting me on the call. Any of those either. Great. So we'll start the agenda with item number three, which is we still have this open loose end here with consensus recommendation for charter question B. And this is regarding the expiration of FOAs. And there is some language that bounced around last week, and that was discussed by the working group on the call, and that caused us to go back and then revisit some of the changes. Some were accepted, some were added. I think that there were some of the text in the center there was added, I believe, by Bob. There were some changes by Simonetta. I believe Barbara Knight had some edits as well, and then the group accepted some of the changes and modified some of the changes and did not accept some of the other changes or you know, whatever the case may be. But anyway, the result is what you see there on the screen with a markup version on the top, the highlights in the different colors, and then a clean version down at the bottom. So what I would like to do at this point is ask Marika to read through this one last time, and if there are no objections, we will call this language adopted for our consensus recommendation for charter question B, and then we will move on to the list of open issues for charter question A. So Marika, if you could read through the clean version one last time, and then we will... We'll just take a cue.
Thanks. Okay, this is Marika. I will do. So the recommendation reads, the working group concludes that FOAs, once obtained by a registrar, should be valid for 60 days. Following this time period, the registrar must reauthorize, via a new FOA, the transfer request. Registrar should be permitted to allow registrants to opt into an automatic renewal of FOAs if desired. In addition to the 60-day validity restriction, FOA should expire if there is a change of registrant, or if the domain name expires, or if the transfer is executed, or if there is a dispute filed for the domain name. In order to preserve the integrity of the FOA, there cannot be any opt-in or opt-out provisions for these reasons for expiration. As recommended and approved as a result of the IRTP Part B PDP, losing registrars under IRTP-B are now required to send an FOA to a prior registrant. The work group advises that losing registrars have the option to send a modified version of this FOA to a prior registrant in the event that the transfer is automated where the FOA would be advisory in nature. Finally, during the course of its deliberations on this topic, the working group notes that the use of EPP authorization info, auth info codes, has become the de facto security mechanism in our industry, and thereby replaced some of the reason for the creation of the standard FOA. We recommend that future efforts in this area examine whether the universal adoption and implementation of EPP auth info code should eliminate the need of, and actually there is something cut off, of FOAs.
Okay, thank you, Marika. I think that So we'll go ahead and take a cue here. If there's anyone that wants to comment on this language, or we can begin the process of moving on from it. I did want to point out that there is one bit here that is still sort of a loose end, which is that we recommend that future efforts in this area examine the relationship between auth input codes and FOA. You know, Marika, I think, raised an important point, which is that we have other IRTP working groups coming up, and perhaps we should explicitly recommend that one of those future working groups examine this issue. You know, I'm open to that idea. I think it's definitely more, it's less ambiguous, it's more clear. But on the other hand, it does kind of feel like it's punting an issue to a different group, as opposed to, I guess, now, where it's punting it just to some ambiguous, you know, future work. So what are the group's thoughts, if any, on the last part of this sentence? And any recommendations on that? I saw Marika's hand went up and then down, so I guess I will start with Mikey first. Go ahead.
Hi, James. Thanks. It's Mikey. I was on the group that chopped the IRTP into five, and I don't have at the tip of my tongue which of the next two would be the best, but I would tend to support the idea of taking a look at those and picking one that's more appropriate. I don't think that it's punting. I think it's really just putting that issue in the right place to discuss it. Because as I recall, the next two IRTP working groups have different focuses, and I think it would be good to pick the right one and recommend it.
And if there is not a right one or a best fit, should we...
I'd pick one
on
anyway.
The last one, or
no? I'd pick one anyway. I have a feeling, just off the top of my head, that there will emerge a better one. I just can't remember what's in those last two.
Okay, thanks, Mikey. Bob, would you mind telling to Marika first?
I don't mind at all.
Maybe she can clear some of this up. Go ahead, Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. I initially raised my hand on that specific point. Where I also believe that it will really help the council to be, you know, as specific as possible where you believe this work fits. And on the question on what are the remaining PDPs, I'm not really sure where it fits exactly, but you know, to be fair there, I think the issue that got added to this PDP on the change of registrant didn't necessarily maybe fit as well with the category that was assigned to this one, so that might not be such a big issue. But the issues that are lined up for the PDPD, they focus on dispute policy enhancements. There are questions like whether reporting requirements for registries and dispute providers should be developed, whether additional provisions should be included in the TDRP, whether dispute options for registrants should be developed, and whether requirements or best practices should be put into place for registrars to make information on transfer dispute resolution options available to registrants. And then the PDPE only has one issue in it at the moment, is penalties for IRTP violations, and it deals with the question whether existing penalties for policy violations are sufficient or if additional provisions, penalties for specific violations, should be added into the policy.
Okay, so I'm not sure that it fits naturally or cleanly within either of those, and perhaps it can be tacked on to, you know, either or. The other concern, I think, would be that if we were to punt this to a later working group, is that whatever policy would be adopted or changed as a result of this working group, let's say in early 2013, would then be modified again some point in the future, and I think at this pace we would say sometime in 2016. So we would essentially be creating a three-year policy or a deferral of a policy if something were to come out of that. So that's another thought as well. But thanks, Marika. I guess we didn't, next time we do something like this, we should probably create a catch-all bucket at the end to pick up all the issues that shake loose during the course of these series of PDPs. That was a joke, by the way. Bob, you're next.
Yeah, thanks, James. This is Bob. I guess I support everything Marika and Mikey said. I think by doing that, it changes the mode. So rather than being a punt, it's probably a forward pass to a future group rather than just a, you know, random kick it ahead for whoever gets it. So, but I think that's a good approach, and I would agree. I'm not sure which one it fits into, but I think you know, it seems like either one. You know, we have a you know, keen group that would be willing to tackle it and work it to you know, the appropriate conclusion.
Okay, thanks, Bob. I like that forward pass. That seems like it's a little more deliberate, doesn't it? Mikey, you're up again.
Yeah, I like forward pass. This is Mikey. You know, and I'm thinking, here's a radical thought. Why don't we just combine the last two? I think by now, remember the context of this was that back in 2007, I think, when we were building this, these were extremely contentious issues that were perceived to be very difficult to figure out, and so we decided to split it into chunks. I think time has passed. I think this working group is a good example of how well the various interested parties can figure things out, and so my suggestion would be that we combine the last two, get them all done in the next cycle, and put this one in that and any other catch-all stuff, and actually do treat it like a catch-all and finish off.
I'm in favor of that, Mike.
Yeah, okay.
I think it's maybe a conversation we can have outside of this, but I agree with that. We should be consolidating those two. They seem like they can do that. And I think we borrowed from one in an effort to speed this up as well. But Marika's up next.
Yeah, this is Marika. One says, indeed, I don't oppose that proposal, because I think something that, for example, could happen if you know, staff conducts the issue report and we find that, indeed, there's so much in those issues identified. At that stage, we could still suggest, like, well, the council may consider still splitting them up or you know, doing it in a different way than having everything together. Because looking at the last issues on the policy violations, I wonder if part of that has already been addressed with the new RAA, where I think there's certain you know, gradations of penalties in there when you know the contract or policies linked to the contract are violated. So I'm just, you know, this is just on the top of my head. I'm not sure if I'm right there, but maybe that might be one issue where it's maybe less of an issue than indeed when this whole process started a couple of years ago. So from that perspective, I think there might be benefit in combining these and looking at the end of the issue report stage to see what we really have at hand and decide the path forward from there.
Yeah, I agree. And like Mikey is saying in the chat here, it's not really all of our intentions to leave IRTP work to our children and grandchildren to complete. Okay, next up is Barbara.
This is Barbara. So I think actually it probably makes a lot of sense to consolidate them as well. My initial thought was that if we did not consolidate them, I would probably vote for it to be in PDPD just because that one relates mostly to the transfer dispute portion of the policy. And, you know, I think that for the most part, the FOA really is used in conjunction with that more so than anything else. I mean, obviously, it is used to get, I guess, a request for validation, if you will, from the registrant that they actually want a transfer to happen, but typically that's asked for as part of a filing if a transfer dispute does arise. So I could go either way. I would agree that, you know, to the extent that we could get this wrapped up sooner rather than later, and since there is that only, you know, one item in the last PDP, I would be all for consolidating them.
Okay. All right, thanks, everyone. So it sounds like there's fairly strong support for specifically targeting this to a future iteration of PDP and then somewhere appropriately in the report, and I guess this is where we're kind of looking for Marika to guide us on where we could make a recommendation that the last two iterations of the IRTP, the B and E, be consolidated into a single final working group, and those poor slobs, which, let's be honest, is going to be us, right? But those poor folks will have no ability to execute any forward passes. If they shake out any new issues in the course of their work, they're going to have to deal with them before they can go forward, because they're the caboose on the IRTP train. So that's kind of where I think everybody's going here. We'll just kind of target that. And then I guess as far as the recommendation about consolidation, I would look to Marika to help us figure out where that needs to go. But with the substance now of Charter Question B and the FOAs, I think we've worked on this language fairly extensively. I don't necessarily hear that there are any material objections to anything left in the message. So can we now declare that we have resolved this message and ask Marika to include this clean language in our final report? I see some green check marks popping up. Excellent. We'll just put my check mark up. I don't know quite how to do that. There we go. Oh, lots of check marks. Fantastic. And we can certainly say that there were abundant opportunities to weigh in on these, and I think that the dummy language that I put out there the first time around improved with each iteration. So I definitely want to extend thanks to Bob and Samantha and to Barbara for helping to clean that up, and then Marika, of course, for making it all make sense in the end. Okay, so now that the low-hanging fruit is done, we can move on to our open issues for Charter Question A and the change of registrant procedure. I'm open to ideas, folks, on how we can attack this list in the most expeditious manner. Just looking at the calendar, you know, we have today, next week, and I think maybe one or two more calls. And I think we indicated in our work plan that we wanted at least one, and if not 2 weeks, to read through the final report as a group. So, you know, just want to make sure that we don't if we don't spend a week per open question when we get to Charter Question A. So, you know, I'm open to ideas on how we can address these in the most in a way that makes the most sense and makes the best use of our time. Marika, do we have the list of the open questions? I know we have the final draft report that we can... here we go. So everyone, it looks like you have scroll control. You see we have 9 questions there for... Okay, I think I'm a little lost here. Just a moment here. Marika, can you help me understand? Are these the list of the 9, these are the first 9 are attached to Charter Question A, and then the last one was the one we just resolved with AuthInfo and Charter Question B?
Yes, this is Marika. Indeed, the first 9 that are listed there are all linked to Charter Question A, but... I think if you look at the final report, we might have to put, you know, the 2 together to make sure that each of these have been addressed. But I think looking at, you know, some of the proposals that Mikey has already made and that are incorporated in the report, and I've also highlighted some sections that I think link together with these questions, I think that should give us a good idea on where we still need to you know, define what the working group's position is and where indeed we already have concrete proposals on the table to consider.
Okay, thanks. So as the person who is sort of holding the pen on this final report, where do you feel you need the most immediate, where do you feel is a good starting point?
This is Rick. I think probably starting at the language that Mikey proposed, I think would be a good start, because I think that basically describes the overall process. And I think having a, you know, agreement or clarification on where working group members stand, I think, will help define some of the other open questions, which are sort of linked, but, you know, can be addressed separately. For example, like, you know, what constitutes a change of registrant, which changes are you know, affected. I think that's an open issue we have in there.
Okay. So do you think the best place to start then is by going to the draft final report and then going through them chronologically as they appear?
Yes, that would be my suggestion.
Okay. Well, let's do it that way then, just so that we're following that the trail of breadcrumbs there.
Yeah, and then, Rick, I think then at the end of that, we should just look back at the open items just to make sure that indeed they were all addressed as part of, you know, our final review of the report.
Okay. And do we have the ability to zoom in here? I apologize, I'm working from a hotel room, so I can't really see.
Yeah, this is Rick. I've taken control now, because just to make sure that everyone, if everyone just goes to, I'll release it now so everyone can zoom in and make a difference. But it's basically, I think, page 21 where we'll start off focusing on the language that has been provided by Mikey. There's some other changes before this in the document, but they're more administratively. I need to, you know, update the number of working group meetings everyone has attended, and the executive summary will need to be updated following finalization of the rest of the report. But this is like the first part where there are the real substantive changes, and a review needs to take place by the working group.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so it looks like, scrolling through here, there's a number of terminology changes, and then we get to recommendation for charter question A, recommendation one. That the working group recommends. Go ahead.
Yeah, Ms. Marguerite, if I can just maybe add one thing, because one thing I did do is move around a little bit the order of, you know, where the recommendation starts and the proposed process, because in the initial report, we actually had it the other way around. We first spoke about the proposed process and about the notes, and then we actually had the recommendation. But my suggestion is to actually turn that around and start off with the recommendation to really make clear that the proposed change, the proposed change of registrant process and the notes that are attached to that, that those are all an integral part of the recommendation itself, to make really sure that it's seen like that and not that those are just notes or deliberations of the working group, but that's all, you know, part of the recommendation itself.
I agree, and knowing how many ICANN audiences typically consume these reports, I think they skip to the recommendations anyway. So I think that makes sense. I don't know that anyone would object to that. Okay, so can we then begin with recommendation one?
Yeah, and this is Marika. Maybe it's worth asking Mikey to take you through the changes, because I think he has basically suggested this language based on the work that was done on the flowchart and the discussions I think we had on the previous meetings.
Okay, but where do Mikey's changes begin? On page 21?
Oh, basically, yes, exactly. At the top of page 21, those are, I think, already changes that Mikey made. I mean, I think all of these here on the page are Mikey's proposed edits.
Okay, all right. They still had your name attached to them, but...
Yes, because Mikey made them in a redline version, so indeed they all shown as mine, but they're actually really
okay,
Mikey. Mikey can speak up if he sees something that isn't his. But it wasn't possible to do that differently, unfortunately.
Well, these also look like just more like stylistic changes or you know, I'm looking for where the material changes begin.
I think it's looking at the proposed change of registrant process. I think that's where it really...
There we go. Okay. So does everyone see where we are about halfway through page 21 on the screen there? So, Mikey, would you like to walk through your changes and the rationale here beginning at that point?
Sure, this is Mikey. And I also have a new version of the pictures that kind of sort of aligns with this. It certainly attempts to, so if you want to switch to pictures at some point, let me know. I've got those handy as well. The first few things that I did... If you roll down to the part that says, actually, why don't you, I'm going to take control back, James, and just see if I can make this big enough so that people can read it, because that way I can make sure that you're looking at the right page. If I zoom it that big, can you read it okay?
I can read the main text, but the markup starts to disappear, but...
Yeah.
We're good for now, I think.
I think, you know, most of the markup stuff is mostly just stylistic. It's the red text that I think is the
okay.
The
so
main
take
thing.
Us through take us through one where you feel like it's you know, there's been a fundamental change. I think first of all, when we're saying change of registrant process, what were we calling this previously?
I can look back and tell you that.
Change of control.
Change of control, correct. Okay. So I think everyone, at some point, everyone on this working group we discussed that, and I think we had very strong support for the idea that this is much clearer and easier to understand for consumers of this recommendation.
Right. So then the next one is, having concluded that there are, actually that is Marika's change, the original language was that there could be benefits. So she's amplifying that. And then the next one, the work group recommends the following. And in the original language, that said the work group proceeded by developing. So again, you know, this is where language is just getting amplified just a bit. The first substantive change from our prior draft really occurs at the phrase that I tacked on to the first bullet, where I said, I'm sort of amplifying the notion that if somebody wants to pre-approve that they need to be, those pre-approvals need to be secured pretty aggressively. And so this is new language that I've created. It may need some tweaking, but the notion here is that you know, one of the issues that, that certainly the aftermarket community has is having a way to set this up in advance so that essentially their whole business model survives. And so this is saying, oh, that's fine, but if you do it, you need to take extraordinary care that a hijacker can't come into an account, glean information from that account, and pre-approve the transfer. So that's the language that's trying to get at that. And we've talked about that a bit in the pictures. The next one...
Can we pause there for just a moment?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, so what specifically are we saying here that if you're going to pre-authorize a change of control, change of registrant, sorry, that if you're going to get all that authorization in advance, that advanced authorization has to come through some other channel. It can't be through just a checkbox in a control panel or something like that. It has to be through, what, some kind of two-factor?
Right.
I'm not really clear what we're saying.
Well, that's what the last clause of that sentence is trying to get at. It's trying to say, for example, out-of-band authentication based on information that cannot be learned from within the account. I put for example in there,
well,
because I'm not sure that we want to specify technology within a policy.
Yeah, I just want to get some clarity on this because I'm not sure I agree or disagree because I'm not sure I fully have wrapped my head around it. So I'm just kind of playing devil's advocate. If it sounds like I'm pushing back, it's just in an effort to make sure that this is fully fleshed out. So, for example, when we say based on information that can be learned from within the account. I guess what I'm getting at here is, and I see that Bob's in the queue, so maybe he can probably articulate this a little bit better than I can, or if he's thinking the same question, but something along the lines of, when you say from within the account, you know, I think you might also mean from within what information that could be gleaned from within who is, definitely. That's a public system. I can go into an account at, I'm thinking about the one-stop shops, the one-stop providers that have multiple business and product and service offerings under one login, under kind of a single sign-on. And I'm concerned that this might, you know, significantly impact those because a lot of this information is contained within that account. If your account profile contains your method of payment and your telephone number, for example, then having an out-of-band authentication that uses text messages is not allowed by this language because you can get that telephone number from the account or you could change that telephone number in the account. Am I understanding that correctly?
Well, the intent here is that, and again, you know, this is the grand compromise. So if
I'm
it's
not trying
possible
to
do
out.
This, then I'm fine to yank it. But this is my attempt to reach out and bridge the gap between my position, which is, no, you can't pre-approve these at all, to some mechanism that preserves the aftermarket's ability to do these things in an automated way. And so I'm happy to change this language to make it correct, but you know, in terms of pushing back, hey, you're pushing against a guy who doesn't care.
I guess I would think that the aftermarket folks would be more restricted. Well, you know what? I'm speculating now. Let's go to Bob. Bob, can you help untangle this for me, please?
Yeah. No, thanks. This is Bob. Yeah, I think, you know, and Mikey and I had talked about this before, and I think the out of band, I think the operative phrase is, for example, out of band authentication. So we're not dictating how it would work, but I think proposing a, you know, one potential approach. I think the, you know, maybe the word that we didn't insert here or the phrase we didn't insert here was a, you know, something along the lines of highly secure, which gives the, you know, which essentially implies that, you know, this must take, you know, the utmost care in providing security, yet not necessarily dictating what it would be. So that's, you know, that was kind of my thinking. I think, you know, where Mikey and I were coming in together on this. I guess the one question I might have is, you know, what does happen next following this? If we make some suggestions in the wording here that describe the intent, is the actual implementation then dictated as a follow-on? Is that the next phase of IRTP, or is that a separate group that then goes and digs in and figures out how it's going to be implemented? Because I actually wasn't clear on that. That was one of the questions I had.
Well, to address that question, one of the things that we'll have to discuss a little bit later on is whether or not this group should call for or recommend that there be an implementation team, which is typically a subset of the working group working together with staff to actually develop the implementation of the recommendations that come out of a working group. And we did that previously, I think, for some other working groups like FEDNR, et cetera. I'm just concerned on this particular issue, Bob, that the language might paint not just aftermarket providers but all registrars in paint them in too small of a corner, that if you also, let's say, have hosting and aftermarket and SSL, and let's say if you were a multi-service provider like the company that I work for, there could be a lot of information in the account profile that could would all be off limits for any kind of secure out-of-band two-factor authentication. So I'm not really sure what's left. And I think it would say that certain providers would not be able to obtain any kind of pre-authorization because they would be punished for having all that information account accessible. I don't know that that's the intent. I'm just saying that that's been my impression of the language. Let's jump to Marika first, and then, Bob, is that a new hand?
Yeah, that's a new hand, but please, Marika, go ahead.
Okay. Thanks. Marika?
Thanks, this is Marika. Yeah, just to respond to Bob's question on implementation, usually it's indeed once recommendations are adopted by the GNSO Council and then adopted by the board, they get passed to ICANN staff for implementation. But we've seen in recent years that there's sometimes questions that ICANN staff may have because, you know, some of the policy language might be ambiguous or there might be things as part of the implementation where staff realizes that maybe certain things cannot be done as certain recommendations imply they should be done. So what is part of the new, the revised GNSO PDP is what James was referring to is the creation of implementation review teams, which, you know, normally will consist of a subset of members from the original working group that developed the recommendations so that staff has like a counterpart to which it can feed certain questions and then have a review as well of the implementation plan before it's published to the broader community to really make sure that the implementation follows intent of the actual recommendations themselves. And as James refers to, I think we're currently testing that sort of with as well with the post-exploration recommendations. And I would strongly encourage you as well to make that one of your recommendations as well as maybe one of the more administrative recommendations in this report to the council that such a implementation review team is created so that you can work with staff to make sure that the implementation follows the recommendations as intended.
Now, thanks, Marika. And I think I agree we should consider that one of our recommendation zero. But, Bob, go ahead. Can you maybe bring us back to this particular topic?
Yeah, this is Bob. So, yeah, I totally support that. I think that if the, you know, a subset of this team gets to continue with this, I think the, you know, the chances of an outcome that we'd all be happy with would be much higher. I would also say, James, to your point, if you're uncomfortable with this wording and you feel as if that, you know, that takes the intent further than it should and, you know, potentially constrains, you know, the implementations and you know, might put us into a suboptimal position there, then I'm okay with, I don't know about Mikey, but I'm okay with revising the wording and making it somewhat more general, as long as, you know, the intent is maintained that, you know, the idea is that this will be a, you know, a highly secure approach that would, you know, protect both sides, both the aftermarket and the, you know, the non-aftermarket. So.
Yeah, maybe that's the right approach, Bob, is to say, you know, that we require or recommend, you know, emphasize security. You know, what do we call it, best of breed practices, et cetera. But when we get specific about what information can and can't be used, I think that starts to paint the providers into a very narrow corner. And I think that it's perhaps too restricted. Go ahead, Samantha, you're next.
Maybe one way forward could also be to give an example and then just say that the implementation team that gets to actually work on this should think about items such as this so people get a choice, because I'm thinking that it's not that hard to put something in place where, as for example, you predefine some security questions and the responses to these aren't visible in the account and stuff like that. And I'm sure there's like 3 or 4 or 5 different things that people can think of that could be done, and then just give these as an example of the type of things that we would consider to be more secure than something that you can just visibly look up in the account.
Right, okay. Okay, so I guess it goes back to Mikey and Marika. What do you think we should go from here? You think the language recommendations there will be sufficient?
This is Mikey. I've been editing a draft as we talked, and with your permission, I'll share my screen rather than. The trouble is that then I'm out of sync with Marika. So let me and Marika push this back and forth. I've been taking notes in a draft.
Okay.
And so maybe I'll just read it real quick just to give you a sense of what I've done. However, such pre-approvals must be highly secured, that's new, and constructed in a way that prevents an unauthorized person from requesting the action based exclusively on account credentials that may have been compromised. For example, out-of-band authentication based on information that can't be learned, blah, blah, blah. The details of, and then a new sentence, the details of how this is achieved will be addressed by an implementation review team to ensure that this is implemented in a way that is technically achievable yet addresses the intent of this policy. So that's the start.
I think that's a good start. I think if you can send that to the list, we may want to take a closer look at that.
I was a little surprised at how quiet the list was when I sent this out the first time. So I think it's important.
I bet you they didn't see it. I bet you I didn't.
Yeah, well, maybe this time around, huh?
Yeah,
because this is first draft. I was really expecting to see a bunch of comments and then a second draft before we got to this meeting. But, you know, anyway, I think it's pretty malleable language. I have no objections to the direction that this is going.
Yeah, and I think that seems like we're all violently agreeing with each other in principle. It's just that we want to make sure that the language doesn't create any unintended consequences. At least that's where I'm coming from, and it sounds like that's where everybody else wants to go to. Everyone wants this to be a secure process without tying too many hands unnecessarily. So.
Right.
Okay, Mikey, can you take us to the next paragraph and your changes there?
Yeah, the next one is a change of registrant cannot take place simultaneously with a change of registrar. That's from the old draft. And I added a clause that said, although they can be made to appear that way to registrants in a registrar's user interface, and this isn't really policy, this is just sort of clarifying something that, you know, the geek in me says you can't simultaneously update a database two fields at a time. You have to, these things, I'm a COBOL programmer. You have to do these things one at a time. And in policy, they have to happen one at a time, but they can be, I think the concern from the aftermarket community was that this was going to be require two user processes. And so I just wanted to highlight the fact that this could still be made to appear as one thing, even though they aren't, either technically or in policy. And then the other part that I enhanced on this is just a suggestion that when registrars are building these capabilities, they probably want to do the IRTP first and then do the change of registrant, because we've got this default lock that's going to show up, and if you reverse the order, you're going to hit the lock. So this is mostly just guidance. This is almost implementation guidance. Could, in fact, go into an implementation document rather than a policy document, but it was mostly addressing concerns that had been raised and clarifying the thing.
Okay. Any thoughts on that, Simonetta? Go ahead.
Maybe I missed something at some point, because I know that I did miss a couple of workgroup calls, but did we discuss this item? Because I thought that was one of our open items, that we weren't clear whether or not and in which order we want to recommend this should be done.
We've had a lot of conversation about that, and it's fine with me to retrace those steps, although I might want to switch to the pictures to do it. The main thing is in this sentence, what I'm trying to get across, is that there is an order if there's a lock, because otherwise, if you change registrant first, then you trigger the lock, and then you have to wait 60 days or 30 or whatever we decide. So, yes, there has been quite a bit of discussion about this.
Simonetta, go ahead.
I know that there's been quite a bit of discussion about this. I am just wondering if we ever actually came to an agreement or some kind of consensus on the question, because I just recall that we have discussed this in circles and up and down, but we haven't, at least as far as I know, reached agreement on this item. And I do remember specifically from the comments in I think it was Costa Rica or Prague, one of those meetings where it's been voiced as a concern, I believe, from Michael Schohat or someone else who was in the comment tool as well, that we shouldn't prescribe an order in which this should be done. In the sense, I don't disagree, Mikey, with that. Maybe we have to say something like it's two steps, but I wasn't sure if we had said that it has to always be one way around or the other, and I also don't know if we had agreement on the 60-day lockdowns either.
My understanding, Simonetta, from reading this is not that we're prescribing an order, but we're essentially saying that one order has a security vulnerability and will trigger a lock, and the other order does not. So we're recommending that the other order, it's not a requirement, but it's a recommendation. In order to avoid a lock, you would use this sequence. Am I responding correctly, Mikey?
Yeah, that's why it says it's advised.
Advise, okay. Simonetta, go ahead.
Right, but that in essence basically means that there's really only one way left to effect or to efficiently get a transfer done, because nobody wants to have a process that takes 2 months to complete.
Well, it wouldn't mean that there's only one way. It's just that the other way you would essentially be accepting the vulnerability and the 60-day restriction, which we've already indicated in the previous working group has the ability to be removed anyway. within 5 days. So I don't know that it's not really requiring that it happen in a certain order. It's more of a saying that there is a preferred order and that there's this other sequence that introduces these other vulnerabilities. I felt like we talked about this extensively, but maybe I'm missing something.
This is Mikey. Let me just add that there's really two ways to do this in a different sequence. One different sequence way to do this is to waive the lock prior to initiating the transfers. We get down into that in a bit. In which case, you can do them in either order you want because there's no lock. But if the default condition applies, which is that there is a lock when you change registrants, then it's a good idea to do the IRT first, then do the change of registrant.
Okay. Simonetta?
I'm wondering, just in real practical terms, if this is something that maybe James and Michaela and other registrars on the mailing list can weigh in. Because when I'm thinking about how a transfer is currently done, in the case where you want to change the registrar and the registrant, effectively what's happening is that somebody gives someone else an off-code, and that person goes to their registrar and says, please start the transfer for the domain name xyz.com. Here's the off-code for it. And then that new registrar just sends an EPP command into the registry that probably does both at the same time, set a new registrant and also ask for the transfer, and or maybe they actually do send two commands anyway, but this is something that maybe the registrars of the group could shed some light on and then with that in mind tell us whether or not they see issues with this wording. I mean, really from a purely technical point of view, maybe James and Michaela and other registrars in the group can put their thoughts forward and ask internally how this is actually done.
Yeah, I think sorry about interrupting. I can't get into the Adobe room to raise my hand. It's Rob Golding. You can't change the contacts on the domain until after the transfer completes. It's physically not possible. You don't own the contacts. So you can't do it as one action, and you can't do it before the transfer happens. You can only do it after the transfer happens. And as far as I understand it, current ICANN policy is we must retrieve the current WHOIS details for audit purposes as well, so you know who the existing details were at the point of transfer.
That's correct. And in thin registries, you can't change the context because there are none.
Exactly.
Okay, so I think Simonetta's advice is well-founded. Let's take a closer look at this operationally. What is actually possible and what's desired. I think that the general idea that we're trying to get across here is that change of registrar and change of registrant are two separate functions that should not and could not occur simultaneously. Although they can be they can occur within close conjunction of one another to the extent that from a registrant perspective they may appear to occur simultaneously, but there are security concerns if they are not done according to a certain sequence, and we need to think about the protections there. So let's take a look at that, as Simonetta mentioned. Let's maybe point that specifically at the registrars and the registries. I guess we're talking about how they're going to handle and sequence their EPP transactions, we should include the registries as well. We've only got 8 minutes left. Mikey, what's next?
I think we've probably, well, I didn't think any of these were going to be hard, but I think we've hit the, on to this next page. Here is where we were talking about the 60-day lock. We had beaten that up a fair amount in the first draft, but there you go. And this language that I tacked on is the same as the language above, so I think it falls to the same discussion. Let's tune up the opt-out security stuff same way we did on the other one. So I'm going to skip that and just push pretty quick here. The step zero changes, is essentially, again, the sequencing thing. I don't think we want to debate it on this call. I think, once again, this one might be one to send to the registrars and registries. Let's see. Then there's the step one where, you know, there's changes here to let either side initiate. So either the prior or the gaining registrant sends credentials to the other registrant. This is another one probably for registrars especially to take a look at, because I kind of made that one up on my own in order to allow flexibility for either side of the transaction to initiate it. This is all change of registrant. This is not IRTP. This is the new thing. And there, this is one that we may want to include in the hard look from the smart people conversation, because I may have made up something that doesn't make sense. So I'll just highlight it for you and let you know that it's purely a Mikey fabrication and may be wrong. Then I'm trying to push through really quick. I think the remaining... one of the conversations we had was about what to do in the case of thin registries. All of this works a lot more easily in a thick registry. What about thin? And so I added a note. Let me just highlight this. It's not currently possible to validate the registrant information that the registrant information is identical during an inter-registrar transfer in thin registries. And remember, what we're saying in all of this is that registrant information cannot change during an inter-registrar transfer. That's the reason we're splitting these things. Thus, implementation of these policy changes in thin registries is contingent on either the implementation of a uniform who is data access provisions, which are being discussed in RAA, or an outcome of a PDP that mandates thick who is across all registries, or something else. And so, again, this is something that smart people should take a look at, because, you know, this is at the core of the policy that we're proposing here. And I think
that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think then we're into other stuff. So sorry that we soaked up the last half hour, but I think this shows the need for people to really hit this hard on the list. Between the meetings, because we covered a lot of ground that, in my mind, had already been covered here. Sorry about that.
Well, thanks, Mikey, and that is good advice. And Marika just reminded me that I think we only have three meetings remaining until we're all going to be heading up north there to Canada. So we've got just a minute left here, but I wanted to close off and say that to thanks to Mikey. for this draft language and for tracking the draft for the previous charter question. We are going to have to somehow boil these down on the list. And Marika, I think that while the draft report makes a nice container for all of these changes, I think that we will occasionally have to just kind of extract the draft language out into the body of the email so that it's a little bit so that we can break them down into different email threads based on whichever language section we're talking about. So we can maybe address that offline. Next meeting will be same time, same place. Please look for updates on the list, and we'll continue to push through the open questions with regard to Charter Question A. I will also work with Marika to, I think there are a couple of, I've been burned by this before, but a couple of relatively non-controversial questions that are still open. So I'll start some email threads on those, along with some dummy language that we can poke at, and then maybe we can parallelize this process a little bit so that some of these questions are occurring simultaneously with the work towards the final language happening simultaneously on a number of questions and a number of fronts. So thanks, everyone. I hope to see you next week, and please watch the list.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, James.
Bye.
Thanks, James.
Thanks, James. Bye.